Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
She has brought us the world.
It is a new day here in this country.
And told America's most important stories.
How does a government shutdown affect national security?
She's opened our eyes.
What happened to you?
I was sexually assaulted my freshman year.
And our hearts.
Were you scared?
Mm-hmm.
What were you thinking?
About my mom.
Now, she brings us truth and understanding right when we need it most.
Wow, this is pretty spectacular.
The CBS Evening News with Nora O'Donnell. Weeknights.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The push for gun control.
The president's now focused on the need for what he calls meaningful, intelligent background checks.
And later, fighting climate change on the ground and on your plate.
We need to also think about our land use, and we need to think about agriculture.
And now, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Let's start this weekend with the mass shootings in Texas and Ohio that killed dozens last weekend. Correspondent Steve Futterman has been covering the El Paso shooting and its aftermath. Steve, tell us what we know about the nearly two dozen victims killed in the attack who are being remembered this weekend.
Well, they range in age from the youngest victim, he was 15 years old, a student, to people in their elder years. Many of them were of Hispanic background, and at least seven, maybe eight, were Mexican nationals, people who crossed the borders. It was a tradition for many people from Juarez to come to this Walmart on Saturday. Many people get their paychecks on Friday, and they would come here every weekend day. These were the people who were at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Steve, some victims in the hospital turned down offers to meet the president, and there were protests in El Paso when the president arrived Wednesday. What happened?
Well, we do know that there were a number of people who were still being treated at one of the hospitals who had a chance to meet with President Trump when he came here on Wednesday, and they turned down that opportunity. Now, whether that was a direct rebuff of President Trump or they just didn't want to meet with anyone is a bit unclear. There were a couple people who had been discharged who did come back to meet Mr. Trump. But I think it's fair to say that the vast majority of people here, and this is not a Trump town, it voted overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton in 2016. It's fair to say in this town, I think most people were not happy with President Trump coming here. Beto O'Rourke, the former congressman who represented this area, he talked about his feelings that Mr. Trump should not come here.
People in El Paso, by and large, do not want to see him here, understand that he is part of the problem, part of how we got to this point.
And these were reactions from just some ordinary people. They wanted Mr. Trump to stay away.
He's done enough damage.
What would your message be to him?
Stay put. Don't come.
He's not welcome here.
Would you prefer he not show up?
Yes.
Now tell us a little bit about what we know about this suspected shooter, 21-year-old Patrick Crucius. He is in police custody. What have we learned so far about him?
Well, the main thing we've learned about him is this manifesto that he posted. Now, it's not clear, and it may not be likely that he actually wrote the manifesto. This may be a situation where he saw it online, copied and pasted it. But these were beliefs that apparently he had. He was very upset about the influx of Hispanic immigrants into the U.S. He talked about that with authorities. CBS News has learned that he has spoken with officials and has made clear that was what got him upset. He has told authorities he's acted alone. Of course, officials are still looking in to see if his digital footprint shows connections with anyone else.
Steve, before I let you go, I want to talk about your personal interactions on the ground at the scene of this attack with folks there. What's that been like?
Well, rarely do you have an interaction that actually hits your heart. We are reporters. We're sort of like doctors. We cover many of these tragic stories. But when I arrived here, almost at the spot I'm at right now, right near the Walmart on Saturday night, the first person I met was this man in his, I think, 40s or 50s. And I spoke to him. I said, were you inside? He said, no. He said, but my mother was here, and she had been on the phone just before the shooting. Listen to what he told me.
She was in line at 10:31, and they got off the phone at 10:35, and we haven't seen or heard from her since. And she's not in any of the hospitals, so.
You're concerned?
Oh, yeah, big time. We're like, we got everybody looking. Everybody. We got two. I got two sisters at MacArthur trying to get something, and she's 86. My mom's 86. She's very frail. You know, this is her thing, just to come to Walmart every morning. No matter what, she needs, like, one item. You know, she'll come to Walmart. That's her way to get away. You know, she's barely able to drive. If she has to get on the freeway or anything, I usually take her. But
what's going through your mind right now? I'm almost afraid to ask.
We've all been crying, man. Honest. Scary. It's horrible.
Worry about her safety, whether or not she's alive.
Yeah, we just want to find her. That's all.
On Sunday night, I learned that his mother was one of the victims, one of those who was shot and killed, 86 years old. Just a very, very tragic story.
CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman in El Paso, Texas. Thanks again, Steve.
My pleasure, Steve.
Meanwhile, Dayton, Ohio is remembering the 9 people killed when another gunman opened fire on crowds there.
I'm Jim Crisul in Dayton, Ohio. Those who survived the Entertainment District shooting rampage say returning to the site affords them some peace.
It's definitely something that everybody, whether it's in their time or just they need to process it in their own ways. But definitely everybody, I think anybody who is here should come back down at some point.
Ashley Wells knelt on the sidewalk outside the bar where the shooting took place. She offered a prayer, gently laid down flowers, and tightly hugged other friends who lived through the nightmare. Jim Crisula, CBS News, Dayton, Ohio.
The gunman, Connor Betts, was shot dead by police just 30 seconds after he opened fire. And there, too, the president's visit was criticized.
At his stop in Dayton, the White House did not allow reporters or cameras into the hospital, despite originally planning to do so.
We left Ohio, and the love, the respect for the office of the presidency, it was, I wish you could have been in there to see it.
Oh, he was comforting,
was
and he
nice.
Did the right things.
Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown and Dayton Mayor Nan Whaley said the president's visit was appreciated, but his normal rhetoric is not.
A lot of the time, his talk can be very divisive, and that's the last thing we need in Dayton.
Despite that, some in Dayton saw Mr. Trump's trip as his presidential duty.
He's supporting the people and the families that had a loss. Isn't it? Wouldn't that have been humane for him to come?
CBS News White House correspondent Ben Tracy reporting. Before leaving for his August break at his Bedminster, New Jersey club Friday, President Trump called for common sense gun reforms as he reaches out to members of both parties and the NRA.
The president's now focused on the need for what he calls meaningful, intelligent background checks.
So that sick people don't get guns.
He says Senate leader Mitch McConnell is totally on board. And the NRA?
They love our country so much. And frankly, I really think they're going to get there also.
For years, at the NRA's urging, Republicans have opposed a bipartisan effort to expand background checks to cover most private gun sales. But Mr. Trump insists he'll get a bill passed.
There's never been a president like President Trump.
Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, The White House.
But it doesn't appear McConnell will call the Senate back from its August recess to take up any background check legislation, including two bills already passed by the House in February. Here he is on WHAS Radio in Louisville Thursday.
When we get back, hopefully we'll be in a position to agree on things on a bipartisan basis and go forward and make a law.
Coming up, a massive manhunt in Canada comes to an end.
We believe these are the bodies of the two suspects.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
There's been a lot of talk about how other countries have responded to calls for new gun control measures after mass shootings. It took less than a week after a gunman in New Zealand killed 51 Muslim worshippers in Christchurch for the country to announce changes to gun laws there. The UK took similar action after mass shootings in 1987 and 1996, and so too did Australia. Natalie Peters is a reporter at 2GB Radio in Sydney and joins us on the line. Good to talk to you, Natalie.
Thanks, Steve. Great to talk to you.
First off, I want to see if you can describe a bit about what Australians think about all of these mass shootings that go on over here in the U.S.
Well, Steve, it certainly is lead news here in Sydney and right across Australia. The two shootings in the United States on the weekend were the lead story in our news bulletins for about 48 hours. It's still in there, of course, with the reaction. To be honest, here in Australia, we are so used to hearing about mass shootings in America that they often don't make the news. But of course, these two happening so close together, particularly in Texas with the racist motivation, the manifesto, which mentioned the Christchurch shootings, which of course are very close to home for us geographically, it has certainly worried Australians and attracted media coverage. Our Prime Minister spoke out very quickly, expressing his sadness. I would say the debate's been a little different in the past few days. Rather than a righteous, we do it better because of our tough gun laws, I think there's been a nuanced discussion about whether our gun laws would even work in the United States. Given the size, the population, the extent of guns in the population at the moment, a buyback scheme such as the one that worked here so successfully back in the 90s may not have the same impact on gun crime, accidental gun deaths and suicide in the United States. So it's definitely not something where Australia's sitting back and shaking their heads. There's a lot of compassion, there's a lot of empathy, and there's more discussion about what we can do as a global community.
You also deal in Australia with elements of white supremacy, racism. How has your country coped with that?
The government and of course, all our security agencies are very conscious. Australia actually led the push at the recent Five Eyes security talks in London to have a bit of a crackdown on the big internet companies, in particular Facebook, Google, Microsoft, to really get them to take responsibility for the sharing of extremist content online. Well, after Christchurch, during the Christchurch mosque shootings, of course, we all know that Facebook live streamed that attack, and it was broadcast on some TV stations initially before everyone realised what we were watching and what was happening. And that will never happen again. I'm certain that the government will come down a lot harder on those companies, and they now know that they're in their sights. So I guess that is one way that the country is trying to crack down on white supremacy and the message that is being sent. And racism as a whole is something we do discuss a lot here, whether it's against our Indigenous people, the Aboriginal people.
And Natalie, I want to circle back to what happened in 1996 in Australia. Can you remind us a bit about Port Arthur?
Yeah, it was, as you said, 1996 April, and a single gunman, a man named Martin Bryant, went on a rampage down in Tasmania with a semi-automatic weapon. Now, Tasmania is a state, the one that you see off the bottom of the mainland when you look at the map of Australia, and he killed 35 people. They were aged 3 to 72, and there were another 23 people wounded with this semi-automatic weapon. Now, Martin Bryant pleaded guilty. He was given 35 life sentences without possibility of parole, but it really did shake the nation. It's something that I remember very, very clearly as a child. It went on all day. It wasn't until the following day that there was a standoff with police. He set fire to a guest house and in the end ran out, and that's how he was captured. It was horrific, and it really did bring about fundamental changes of gun control laws here in Australia. They were introduced by our Conservative government Prime Minister at the time, John Howard, and he formulated a national firearms agreement which restricted the private ownership of semi-automatic rifles, semi-automatic shotguns and also pump-action shotguns. And it also brought in uniform firearm licensing across the states and territories. It tightened controls on the ownership of those weapons for private purposes, but it also controlled their legal use by recreational shooters. So the states and territories got on board. That's the only way it happened. And I think one of the things that we talk about a lot too is the buyback scheme. There were more than 600,000 firearms handed in. That might sound like nothing in a nation where there are 393 million firearms, but for us, it did make a dent, and it cost the government $350 million to buy back those weapons. So there was an increase in our Medicare levy, which is our public health system, to raise $500 million, and then $350 of that went to buying back those weapons that were now illegal to privately own. So semi-automatic rifles, semi-automatic shotguns, and pump-action shotguns.
And how effective was that in controlling gun violence?
Well, there was research evaluating the effects of that buyback, and initially it found that there was just over 40% decrease in homicide rate and a 57% decrease in suicide rates in the 7 years after that legislation passed. Of course, that shows it was very effective, but some researchers are still uncertain whether that decrease was specifically due to the buyback or whether it was simply part of an existing downward trend as more people move into cities, as our cities grow, and perhaps that need for a gun on a rural property decreased.
To GB, radio reporter Natalie Peters in Sydney on Australia's response to mass shootings. Good talking with you, Natalie.
Thanks, Steve.
Now to Canada, where a massive manhunt ended after police there found the bodies of two teens wanted for three murders. More from correspondent Mark Strassman.
It's huge to be able to hopefully give some people an opportunity to exhale.
Exhale, because for nearly a month, teenagers Brian Schmigelski and Cam McLeod had Canada on edge. On July 15th, a young couple was found shot dead in northern British Columbia, China Deese from North Carolina and her Australian boyfriend, Lucas Fowler. A university lecturer was shot and killed 4 days later. And a mile away, police found this burned-out SUV. It belonged to two missing teenagers. Investigators worried a serial killer had got them too. But the security tape shows Schmigelski and McLeod alive. Suddenly, they were murder suspects on the run. Alan Schmigelski, the father of one of the suspects.
A normal child doesn't travel across the country killing people.
The Canadian Army joined the massive manhunt. It crossed 2,000 miles and four Canadian provinces. 2 weeks ago, another burned-out truck linked to the teenagers was found in remote Manitoba. But the trail went cold until last Friday and the discovery of this abandoned rowboat. Searchers swarmed. A half mile away, in dense brush, investigators found two bodies.
We believe these are the bodies of the two suspects wanted in connection with the homicides in British Columbia.
How the teenagers died is unclear. Why they apparently murdered three strangers remains a mystery. Mark Strassman, CBS News.
Up next, policing in America.
We have challenges, but we're overcoming those challenges a bit at a time.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Sunday nights, Monday mornings, or Tuesday afternoons. You can listen to 60 Minutes whenever you want with the weekly podcast from CBS News.
How many drugs are we talking about?
Hundreds. With hard-hitting investigative reports, interviews, and profiles.
Did these documents that you got prove corruption?
Absolutely.
From a variety of CBS News correspondents and contributors.
I'm Leslie Stahl.
I'm Anderson Cooper.
I'm Bill Whitaker.
For the biggest scoops and the best storytelling, subscribe to the 60 Minutes podcast today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
A new eye-opening look at training police to recognize how to minimize the negative impacts that hidden biases can have on their jobs. CBS News correspondent Jeff Pegase has the story.
Implicit bias training, has it worked?
No.
You don't think it worked?
The training itself, the content, was the absolute worst training I've ever had.
These are current Mesa, Arizona police officers. They are both white. We agreed to alter their voices so that they can speak freely.
And you have to make a decision like that.
This is their department's implicit bias training.
People are inclined to stereotype black individuals as more aggressive.
It's reinforcing the minority of society that has that blanket opinion about Caucasian males. One of the first videos introduced in that training was reaffirming that you're born a victim if you're a minority.
All right, so what do you think the agenda is?
Reinforcing that the police are racist, but specifically the white male police are racist.
To our knowledge, these veteran officers have not been involved in the kinds of high-profile incidents that have divided the community and led to what they see as an overcorrection in new training.
Trying to change what we have done that has worked overwhelmingly effectively. It becomes an officer safety issue, causing officers to second-guess themselves, which is a complete change to when we first started.
Well, there have been some pretty high-profile incidents here. Just sit down, bro. Sit down. Robert Johnson getting knocked around.
Go ahead.
Gabriel Ramirez. Officers squeezed his neck after he was handcuffed. Daniel Shaver on his knees begging for his life in a Mesa hotel room, caught on video.
There's nothing that those officers did that was outside of the training that they had received.
The officers involved in the Ramirez and Johnson cases were not charged with crimes. Officer Philip Brailsford was fired and charged with murdering Daniel Shaver, but was acquitted after a six-week trial.
Put your hands on the car, I'm gonna shoot you in your head, you understand me?
Similar incidents across the country have prompted calls for police to change their approach. A CBS News survey of departments in America's largest cities reveals part of that response. 75% of departments who completed our survey told us that they changed their training after controversial use of force incidents. 90% of departments who say they have implicit bias training say it is required of all officers. But training methods vary. For example, Honolulu, Hawaii told us that they have 1 half-hour session a year. Raleigh, North Carolina told us that they do at least 8 hours per year.
I want our community to feel safe.
Despite what we heard from those Mesa officers, Chief Ramon Batista told us earlier this year that the new training is working.
I think evidenced by the fact that in the last 9 months, we've reduced use of force-related events by over 30% points to the fact that we're making progress.
But about 59% of departments who responded to our follow-up questions say that they don't have a way to know if implicit bias training is working at all. These officers say some of the new training is just for show.
They start the video with saying, "We are not telling you to do this. We are here to present it."
At the beginning of the session, they say, "Don't do this, but you got to watch it."
Correct. It kills morale because to pay for this training, we had to give up something else, right? So instead of doing more firearms training, okay, now we've taken funds from there. So for the officers on the morale, they look at it like, you don't care about me, and you don't care about the citizens. You care about putting on this little show.
Do you think that there are white supremacists on the police force?
Yes.
You didn't even pause.
Have you seen some of the Facebook posts of some of our suspended officers right now? Yes.
Heather Taylor is an almost 19-year veteran on the St. Louis Metro Police Force. She points to the recent report by the Plainview Project, which flagged thousands of racist and derogatory social media posts, including some from 22 current St. Louis Metro officers that compared Black Lives Matter to the KKK. As president of the Ethical Society of Police, a predominantly black local union, Taylor's mission is to root out racial discrimination among police. Protest in Ferguson took place about 10 miles from St. Louis Metro PD headquarters and led to changes in training there. SLMPD told CBS News in a survey that implicit bias training has been mandatory for officers once a year since October of 2014. That's 2 months after Michael Brown's death. Implicit bias training, they've had that here.
Yes.
Has it worked?
I think that's pretty obvious that it hasn't.
If implicit bias training is mandatory, it doesn't seem to have left an impression on Heather Taylor. Have you been through it?
No. It was optional.
Okay.
Lieutenant Cheryl Orange, a patrol officer for the department, says she doesn't remember taking it either.
Wasn't it mandatory?
Not that I recall, but it may have been.
We've been trying to get SLMPD's police chief to comment on our CBS News investigation that found a majority of departments nationwide are adding training to address possible racial bias. Over a period of months, there have been phone calls, emails, and each and every time the police department has declined our request for interviews.
There's a change.
Mm-hmm. So we went to the man who hired the police chief. Jimmy Edwards is the public safety director for the city of St. Louis.
We had an officer tell us. She knows that there are white supremacists on the police force.
I'm not surprised. My job is to root that person out.
Implicit bias training, is it mandatory for all officers?
Yes, it is. It is mandatory.
We've talked to officers who don't remember taking implicit bias classes.
Yeah, well, everybody in the city of St. Louis have taken implicit bias training.
And they can't remember it?
I don't know. That's a good question for them.
That's odd.
It is odd.
Still, Edward says use of force incidents are down in St. Louis City, which he credits to new training. But he also concedes police have a long way to go before he can assure a black mother he met that changes have taken hold in the department.
She asked me,
Can you change our police department? Because every time my little black boy encounters a police, I think one or two things is going to happen. That my child will lose his liberty and go to prison, or that my child will die. We have challenges, but we're overcoming those challenges a bit at a time.
Taylor says that should include better screening of applicants and breaking down what some have called the blue wall of silence, a term for police cover-ups of internal wrongdoing.
Your fellow officers, they might see your comments and be offended. How do you go back to work after making comments like that?
Because when you know you're doing right, you can hold your head up. I don't think that all of our department is bad, but instead of complaining about me, how about you do something to change the culture that you know exists?
Jeff Pagase reporting. Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, how what we eat could help fight climate change, according to a new UN report.
It argues in part that eating more plant-based foods and sustainably produced meats can change land use and mitigate climate change.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio. And I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
The president is naming National Counterterrorism Center Director Joseph McGuire as acting director of national intelligence. He'll take over from Dan Coats August 15th. McGuire is a Navy special operations veteran with extensive national security experience. CBS News military consultant, retired Army Major Mike Lyons.
Joseph McGuire is someone that has been in the intelligence community before as part of the military as well, and has experience in the counterterrorism side. So he should be well accepted in the international community as well as on both sides of the aisle.
President Trump's announcement came after Deputy DNI Sue Gordon announced her departure from the Trump administration. The president is brushing off new North Korean short-range missile tests, but U.S. allies in Asia aren't.
I'm Tom Foti. With North Korea firing test missiles again for the fourth time in 2 weeks now, U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper has been holding meetings in that region, and he tells the Japanese Prime Minister,
"My commitment, Mr. Prime Minister, is the United States remains committed to the complete, irreversible, and verifiable denuclearization of North Korea."
This is nuclear arms talks stall, and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un calls the recent test missile firings a warning to the U.S. and South Korea over their joint military drills that began this week. Tom Foti, CBS News. Washington.
Folks who live in two northern Russian cities are stocking up on iodine used to reduce the effects of radiation exposure after mysterious explosions at a nearby military testing site. The country's Ministry of Defense hasn't said much about the accident, saying only that at least two people were killed and a half dozen injured. But nearby, authorities reported a brief spike in radiation levels. The U.S. Maritime Agency has issued a new advisory regarding threats to commercial vessels from Iran. CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick reports from the Pentagon.
The Maritime Agency is telling U.S.-flagged commercial vessels to send their transit plans to American and British naval authorities before they sail into Gulf waters. The U.S. and Britain have joined forces in a security mission in the region. There have been several incidents involving tankers in Iran near the Strait of Hormuz, where about a fifth of the world's oil passes.
A new UN report on climate change says controlling global warming can only be achieved by reducing greenhouse gases on multiple fronts. That includes the way we use our land and our diets. Correspondent Adriana Diaz explains from Greeley, Kansas.
Rancher Brandy Buzzard says the cattle she raises for beef are part of the solution to climate change, not the problem.
When cattle graze on grass pastures, they are actually improving the grass and what they're grazing on. We are doing everything we can to improve our environmental footprint.
That footprint contributes to the 44% of methane emissions that come from agriculture, forestry, and human land use. According to the authors, there has been a major growth in emissions from managed pastures due to increased manure deposition. That's right, cow manure emits methane, which can also come from cow burps and, yes, cow flatulence. Electricity generation and transportation, like car emissions, make up the majority of U.S.-produced greenhouse gases, but cows account for 2.6%.
So I think that we can make more impactful changes in our lives through recycling or walking to work or using public transportation than we can by actually changing what we eat, because it will have such a minimal impact.
But changing what we eat is what the report suggests. It argues in part that eating more plant-based foods and sustainably produced meats can change land use and mitigate climate change.
The purpose of this report is to say that just doing transportation and electricity isn't enough. We need to also think about our land use and we need to think about agriculture.
That's why some dairy farms, like this one in California, are trapping methane from manure under tarps and converting it to fuel for trucks. At UC Davis, scientists are using the equivalent of a cow breathalyzer to measure how different feed affects manure outputs. UC Davis professor Frank Mitlerner studies livestock and air quality. He and the new report want Americans to also focus on the emissions wasted on food they don't consume.
40% of all food produced in this country goes to waste. So if you're really concerned about your personal environmental footprint around food, well, waste less.
Now, some ranchers told us that they do believe in climate change and they're trying to combat it, but they believe the Earth is being impacted by changing weather patterns, not global warming. Adriana Diaz, CBS News, Greenlee, Kansas.
Folks who want to eat less meat are turning to Burger King.
Burger King is best known for the beefy Whopper, but now the fast food giant is offering an alternative. A flame-broiled version that contains no meat.
The Impossible Whopper is now available nationwide.
The Impossible Whopper's patty is a plant-based product that looks like beef. We had Henry Gonzalez try a regular Whopper and the Impossible version.
As far as flavor, it tastes the same. It's just as good.
If someone were to set this in front of you and tell you this is a normal burger, would you believe them?
Yeah.
The burger is the creation of Impossible Foods, which uses soy and potato protein along with other ingredients. Another company called Beyond Meat does something similar.
Legendary meaty flavor, plant-based patty. It goes beyond your wildest burger dreams.
A number of restaurants are now getting in on the meatless movement, from Carl's Jr. to Little Caesars.
The Impossible Burger costs a dollar more than the traditional Whopper. Burger King is currently the largest outlet offering the meatless product, but likely won't be the last.
That's because demand is growing. Sales of plant-based foods are up more than $1 billion in the past 2 years.
I really think it's going to take shape in other types of menu items beyond just burgers and tacos and pizza.
Food vloggers Crystal Pang and Amanda Shibley came for the Impossible Whopper because they don't eat meat.
It's delicious. I love it. It's like meaty without any of the meat.
The meat-free burger has almost the same number of calories as the beef version, but that isn't stopping sales. Tom Hansen, CBS News, New York.
An international research team may have made a significant step in the early diagnosis of celiac disease. More from CBS News correspondent Bill Rakoff.
Right now, patients being tested for celiac disease have to consume gluten for several weeks before undergoing an endoscopy on the small intestine. Now, researchers have discovered an immune marker that could lead to a simple blood test and a faster diagnosis. Thrilling news for Lisa Murphy of Chappaqua, New York, who has celiac disease along with two of her four children.
It would have been great. It would have been absolutely great. Would have alleviated a lot of stress and anxiety.
The research published in Science Advances. Bill Rakoff, CBS News.
Naloxone, that overdose-reversing drug that saves lives, is still not available where it's needed most, according to the CDC.
While the number of naloxone prescriptions doubled from 2017 to 18, there was still only one dispensed for every 70 high-dose opioid prescriptions. And the problem was even worse in rural areas, according to Principal Deputy Director of the CDC, Dr. Ann Schuchat.
Rural counties were nearly three times more likely to be in the low-dispensing group than were metropolitan counties.
Naloxone has been highly effective, but tens of thousands are still dying each year from opioid-related overdoses. Sabrina Cupid for CBS News, Atlanta.
Coming up, remembering Toni Morrison.
Through 11 novels spanning more than four decades, Morrison delved into the struggles of the oppressed.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Every Sunday, Face the Nation brings you in-depth interviews with the biggest names in Washington.
Kellyanne Conway, Nancy Pelosi, Lindsey Graham, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
You'll never miss an episode with the weekly podcast from CBS News Radio. Tune in to hear moderator Margaret Brennan and the country's top policymakers discuss today's toughest issues.
What is going on? Is this political conspiracy or is this just incompetence?
The Face the Nation podcast. Subscribe today on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
President Trump told reporters aboard Air Force One he's considering clemency for former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich, who was sentenced to prison after being convicted on federal corruption charges in June 2011.
I'm thinking about commuting his sentence very strongly.
Blagojevich was a contestant on The Apprentice. Raids rounding up hundreds of undocumented workers in Mississippi are prompting concerns among immigrant communities around the country.
The sting was the largest single state workplace raid in a single day. More than 650 special agents conducted raids at food processing plants, arresting the majority Latino workforce and several employers. Before their hands were tied, migrants were told to place their personal belongings in plastic bags. They were then taken for processing to the Mississippi National Guard station near Jackson. One of the locations targeted was Pico Foods, which has 3,600 employees in Mississippi. Pico is the eighth largest poultry producer in the country. At a press conference, U.S. Attorney Michael Hurst put businesses that break the law on notice.
To those who use illegal aliens for a competitive advantage, or to make a quick buck, if we find that you have violated federal criminal law, we're coming after you.
Back in 2008, ICE raided a different Mississippi plant. Patricia Ice is the legal director of Mississippi Immigrant Rights Alliance.
What does this do to the families that were not at the plant?
It's devastating. Children may go home and find that their parents aren't there.
Patricia Ice says some of the migrants could be deported. Others could enter the long immigration court process. Omar Villafranca, CBS News, New York.
Latino voters may play a larger role in the 2020 presidential election, according to new CBS News contributor Maria Elena Salinas, who spoke with our Deborah Rodriguez.
There are Hispanics who support President Trump,
That's
right?
That's true. Many.
Who are they and why?
There's a good amount of Hispanics who are Republican who will continue to support a Republican president, no matter who it is. I posed that question to one of the representatives from these organizations. I believe it was Chirla in California, and what she said is, you know, there's people that feel that they're being pushed to one side or the other. When they see that the Latino community is being threatened, they want to be on the side of those who are not threatened. So some do it out of conviction, and some support the president out of fear because they don't want to be targets either.
Let's talk about the 2020 election and the Latino factor, whatever you want to call it. How much of an impact will their support have in next year's
race? You know, we've
race?
Been saying for years that the Latino vote is a sleeping giant and that it's going to awaken and decide who the next president is going to be. I don't know that that has happened yet, but I think it's, if any time it's going to happen, it's going to be in 2020, because Latinos are now more motivated to go out and vote because the pool of Latino potential voters has increased to 32 million. So Latinos will be the largest minority voting bloc in 2020. And also we see young people being more and more motivated and becoming eligible to vote. So a lot of these movements, these grassroots movements that we see to motivate people to either become citizens or register to vote or go out and vote are led by young Latinos.
Maria Elena Salinas, thank you and welcome to CBS News. We're so happy to have you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
The work of writer Toni Morrison is being celebrated following her death Monday. The 1993 Nobel laureate in literature was 88. More from correspondent Michelle Miller.
I think I have a distinctive voice.
Toni Morrison used that voice to challenge beliefs on race and gender. Definitions, she said, belonged to the definers, not the defined. She wrote that in her 1987 novel, Beloved, about a runaway slave who chose death over bondage for her daughter. The book, which later became a film starring Oprah Winfrey and Danny Glover, earned the Pulitzer Prize.
What kind of evil you got in there?
It ain't evil. Just sad. Come on.
Through 11 novels spanning more than four decades, Morrison delved into the struggles of the oppressed. She received the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1993, the first black woman to accept the honor.
She was very much
a mentor to me and a beacon.
Errol MacDonald says he might not have become an executive editor at Random House if she hadn't gotten him his first job in publishing.
What will you miss most?
I will miss her guiding intelligence, her wit, her laughter, and her abiding faith in human beings.
He says up until her death, Toni Morrison was working on a new book, perhaps one last peek into her lens on humanity.
Michelle Miller reporting. Finally this weekend, the history of Woodstock on stage. Correspondent Steve Kathan explains.
It's where Jimi Hendrix played the national anthem. The Jefferson Airplane landed there, too.
All right, friends, you have seen the heavy groups. Now you will see morning maniac music.
The simple stage beneath the performers at Woodstock 50 years ago.
Freedom, freedom.
What happened to that stage after the music stopped at Woodstock?
They started selling everything that was used to build the Woodstock, whether it was the stage, whether it was the light poles. Whatever it was, they sold it.
Steve Gold remembers Woodstock. He was there and lived nearby. And weeks after the concert, his girlfriend's father told him,
"This is the stage that they were selling, and I bought it."
It went on to be used as a paddleball court at a summer compound. Just a few years ago, Gold went back with a friend. The place was in disrepair, but off in the weeds, the stage was still there.
We found the logos and the markings from the Woodstock stage. It was like, oh my God, I can't believe this is still here.
He hired a firm to authenticate it.
You know, my belief is let the world touch that magic that I felt and that the world felt in 1969.
Oh, baby,
he donated part of the stage to a local museum and is selling parts of the rest in frames and pendants, even sawdust.
It's like owning, you know, a Bruce Springsteen guitar or buying a seat from Yankee Stadium.
Some of the proceeds go to five charities.
There's something magical about it.
It's at peaceofstage.com. In the spirit of Woodstock, peace is spelled P-E-A-C-E. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. John Whitley is the technical supervisor. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.